That's the only thing I don't like about this growing old, and I hate it like the dickens. But I love, love, love that I've gotten in to as much as I have to of it.
You've had a good life, Mom. So, Mom, because you were with Julia when she was born, you were with me in the hospital. I'm just curious to know what you remember about that day she was born. What do you remember about it?
Oh, I remember as she was just starting to come out, and someone called to what's her name?
To Jan,
To Jan, probably, yeah.
because she was with Caitlin.
Said, get Caitlin, the baby is about to be born. Well, I wasn't about to leave. This is my responsibility. But anyway, I did sort of leave and raced down the calendar, got her down there, and was there time enough to grab your sweet little hand. Oh, anyway, picked you up, you precious little. I may have the baby any minute. I may. That'd give you quite a story. Anyway, just hush your mouth, or I might not be able to get the greatest story of the whole wide world printed here. So I raced down that. I remember going down so fully down that long, long calendar. It's really not a calendar. It's really a
corridor.
corridor. But I just had to see if you knew the real name. I wasn't sure if you did. Anyway, oh, what joy that was. And then after just a little bit, the doctor came in. Did all the pokes and prods and stuff. He says, "Well, it looks like this little gal can go home. She is in great shape." Oh, we were so happy.
On July 3rd, 1991, Claire Woodward, my nana, was there for my very first breaths. And 25 years later, I held her hand as she took her last. This is the story about her final days, the last 3 weeks of her life. It's a story about what it means to have a good death on your own terms, surrounded by the people you love. My nana was born on July 19th, 1927, in Bakersfield, California. She raised her family in Hawaii, but moved to Boulder County in 1975. Following the flood that damaged much of Boulder County in 2013, my nana was forced to leave her assisted living apartment and then bounced from facility to facility. But she was adamant to die at home, which led to my mom's brother, Michael, my mom, Annie, my nana, and I all living together in a one-bedroom apartment situated just under the Flatirons in Boulder for the 3 weeks before her death. But after spending much of her adult life in Hawaii, the music of Is Kama Koveavoli, Ke Oli'i Rachel, and Olamana often wafted through the house. On that final morning, with a light snow blanketing the ground, my mom, Annie, Uncle Michael, and I sat around her bed.
And the three of us just sat around her and held her hand and Maybe it lasted a couple more minutes of sporadic breath. And then she had a couple very deep breaths at the very end. And then that was that. I mean, it just as sort of natural as you can imagine when you think about like a baby's first breath. And then just that breath that happens however many times a minute for your entire life. Like how many millions or billions of breaths do you take in a lifetime? Mm-hmm. So many. And then
there's going to be a last one.
Yeah, and then we heard that we were there for the last one was really just extraordinary. It felt blessed. It did. I just felt that she had such a long and loving life, generous life, and that she was ready. And so it made it really easy to just help her die because she felt so at peace, I think. Mm-hmm. She was ready to die. And truly that we could be with her in her home. She was not in an institution, which she really didn't want to be. She wanted to be at home surrounded by her people, and she was.
Just think how different it would have been if she had stayed at the facility. It couldn't be a home. We couldn't comfortably stay there the way we did, sleeping right there. It would have just been so different, actually. I mean, it was much better. There was a goodness about the whole thing, and... So I'm glad about that.
It seemed very natural in a way. I feel like the three of us were a great team. And I just remember how easy it was for us to work together, how it was just kind of fun to be together. And even though this, mom was dying, but it was also a really wonderful time to be together.
We cooked and cleaned together. We woke up at 1 o'clock in the morning to watch Rafael Nadal and Roger Federer in the finals of the Australian Open. My mom and I would recite Beatrix Potter's Apply Dapply nursery rhymes in just the way my Nana had taught us both.
So it's interesting how my friends will often ask me how I'm doing and do I miss her, which, you know, of course I do, but much more than that, I feel such that the whole experience was filled with so much love and gratitude. Much more than sadness and pain, it felt just filled with with that.
The whole experience felt natural and effortless, and we laughed a lot.
Oh, yeah.
The stamps, yeah. You won't even be able to get it out.
And Michael would play his guitar and we would sing along to the songs he was writing.
Those last few days I was playing guitar, you know, get up about 6 in the morning, and I did a lot of music while I was there, and then writing songs, playing them, and would just be sitting by mom and playing guitar.
I remember too that the rhythm of her breath, it was like a metronome, and you could hear it anywhere in the apartment. The one morning you had been playing where you were using her breath as your beat, and so the music that you were playing was to the beat of her breath.
City of hope above, bring us your peace.
I don't know that I could express it quite like that to anybody but the two of you. Like, it was really one of the best times. I loved those weeks that it was the three of us.
You're listening to 3 Weeks, a radio documentary looking at the final 3 weeks of life for Claire Woodward, my Nana. I'm Julia Caulfield. My Nana died on February 2nd, 2017, surrounded by two of her children, my Uncle Michael and Mom Annie, and me. But 3 weeks before that moment, I sat with her in the one-bedroom apartment we were living in.
If there was one piece of advice that you could tell me that I don't know, what would it be?
She's asking you to ask me that.
No, Julia's asking Nana to answer that.
That's what I meant.
Yeah.
Okay, if there were one bit of advice that I could ask you...
That you could tell me.
That you should not ever have a baby... Huh? Wouldn't have been that.
No,
oh, it wouldn't have been that.
No, because we want her to have a baby.
Yes, that's what I thought.
So if you could tell Julia something that you think would be good for her to do...
Or to know.
Or to know. Something that would, you think, your wisdom to Julia.
What's the most important thing for...
For what?
For me to know about life.
Oh, I just keep thinking of, I mean, it's almost inane in the way it sounds, probably, that there is no doubt that the greatest thing in life is love. And with that, it's babies and what they bring into our lives. I don't think of anything else right now.
Nana, do you think I should have a baby?
But I must add this, only if you want to.
The last 3 weeks of my Nana's life seem like they're suspended in air. For my mom and uncle and for me, even though we were helping someone die, there was a warmth and it felt like a celebration of life more than a mourning of death.
And the strange thing of talking about our communion really near at the end is it can never really be again in that way, but I miss that. You know, I mean, it was a real special time and it couldn't have lasted really. I mean, it was... how long it should have been. We kept saying, you know, how's it going to be? It's like mom was just dying on her own terms. And it allowed that space for us too. So
it was a beautiful time that we shared together. And when it was over, I did kind of miss it. Just, I think it's not very often in your life where you have a time like that where you are so completely present in the moment. Mm-hmm. And we really were, and it wasn't only just individually, but the three of us together were just really working so well together and so much in the present moment.
Thank you. My Nana said she wanted to live to meet her second great-grandchild and vote for the first woman for president, and she got to do both. But those 3 weeks also coincided with Donald Trump's inauguration.
And you know what's pretty interesting about it, too, and of course, this was a big part of our conversation when we were there, the three of us, but it all was occurring during the time that Trump took over as president. And that sort of just, like, really horrific thing that was going on in our country from all of our perspectives, there was something about being able to just be in the pure moment of helping Mom die that helped cope with those realities that were going on in our country.
On January 20th, my mom had the inauguration on TV. My Nana wasn't communicating much by that point, but just as Trump was about to speak, she asked my mom to sing a song about our country, about all the countries, and about peace. So my mom turned off the TV, and that song became commonplace in our home.
And my this is my home, the country where my heart is. Here are my hopes, my dreams, my holy shrine. But other hearts in other lands are beating with hopes and dreams as true and high as mine.
But for all the work my family did, we also had the support from a team from Suncrest Hospice. They had been with my Nana for about 4 months before she passed, and at least one person would come in each day to help her and support us.
I was amazed at how close I felt to all of them so quickly. Like, just there was an immediate rapport and affection that I felt for them, that they were just so competent, which then made me feel confident, because I think without them there, I might have felt anxious. Helping Mom and dealing with the medications and just knowing what was normal and what to expect, but they helped me feel competent, like I can do this, and that we were so much part of a team.
I go into homes with patients who are approaching the end of life, and we look at the patient and the family as a holistic approach, and we kind of educate and support through the end of life in whatever real way the patient and family needs. We help to identify some of those needs that may not be so apparent, and we can kind of help navigate any of those end-of-life questions.
That's Nikki Haskin. She was one of my Nana's nurses from Suncrest.
We like to bring our patients on to us before they really enter what we like to call that active phase of dying. So we can build those relationships and those rapports and get to know you and get to know Nana so that when it comes time for these things that you don't know and that we can teach you, we've formed a bond, so there's trust. And we know some things that she likes, and we can kind of use those as keys to ease her through this process. So that's why it's so important for that early process, you know, to get to know her for those few months before those, you know, final really, probably I'd say month, 2 weeks to a month where, you know, you can really see that apparent process.
But those visits from hospice were not just helpful for my Nana. They were also important for Michael, my mom, and me.
The visitations meant a lot to me and to Mom. And, you know, we were able to give her a bath, wash her hair, and just talk to her really well, which, again, gave me a break when I can do some things I need to do. And, but, yeah, that meant a lot. And all the staff, I mean, the nursing, just the way they could relate to her, and explain things, you know, to her. It was very good.
I was coming to visit you at our usual time here today. How are you? I I want to hold your hand, but my hands are freezing. I'm going to let them warm up first.
Hi, how are you?
How are you today?
Oh.
I heard you've been having a good day. Very peaceful.
She definitely did things her own way. We talked a lot about anxieties. And I think this is a big thing for people at end of life. And your Nana was definitely had some anxieties eased when she got home, because that's just where she wanted to be. But her dying process was very slow. And I think that it was according to what we typically see, slower, but she struggled a lot with anxiety, so it took a lot of education from us, a lot of support from really the whole team to meet her where she was at in this anxiety process and really allow her to be okay to feel what she was feeling, because she would just get so frustrated with herself. I don't remember this, and you know, this is happening to me now, and this in my 88 years has never happened.
They come down looking nice.
Nice.
Who's coming down, Claire?
At some point, she said, it is hard to leave this earth because it's beautiful. And that really stuck in me. Sometimes, regardless of where a patient is, we tell, oh, just let go. No, it's a beautiful place to let go, and to go to a place, or not to, could be just gone, that's it, done. Or if you have a belief system, there's somewhere you're going, the place you don't know. So she acknowledged that. She said, it is hard to let go.
That's Tomas Bayou. He's the spiritual care coordinator for Suncrest and worked with my Nana.
So I think that's one way to talk about it is, you know, you're born and you'll die. All of us. That's how I approach it to myself. Dying should not be something we are afraid of or we try to hide. So more you accept that you will die one day, you'll start living your life to the fullest. You have a limited number of time, all of us. That it could be a connection for me with my patients. If they are afraid or they don't want to talk about dying, I'll bring myself to it. I will die too. And I think that gives acceptance to we all die. It's a lie. Sometimes when you all have young, able bodies to act and walk like, you'll never die. That's a lie. So when I accept that to myself, that patient will be okay to accept it too. Because it's a common practice for all of us. We all go through that.
While hospice's main focus is on the dying, they can have a huge impact on the family as well. They were always there to answer our questions and be a support for my family. On the day my Nana passed, they were there to handle all the logistics. Death isn't something we talk about, and most people don't know the process until they're in the middle of it. Hospice was there to explain and use their knowledge to make it easier on us. My mom and I kept talking about the similarities between birth and death. To me, hospice seemed almost like the midwives of death, guiding us through the process.
I think that's nature. It's almost we prepare when someone is pregnant, that 9 months, you're getting ready what it looks like when this child is coming. Now we're preparing when this person is going out, what it looks like, but that person is there. It's, I think, the natural way of dying. It's beautiful.
Nikki mentioned that my Nana's death was slow, and that is definitely true.
You know, they take her vital signs, say, okay, guys, she hasn't eaten or drinking anything for a week. Well, actually, she's still doing pretty well, you know.
Hospice told us someone could live up to 10 days without eating or drinking anything, and my Nana took her full time. She passed away on the 10th morning after not having any food or water. We planned her memorial service for the end of the week, but she just kept not dying. Eventually, we said we would have the memorial service whether she had passed or not, and she might just have to come along. In the end, she passed the day before the service. It was small. At the apartment, there were photos and candles all over. While she was not physically there, her spirit filled the space.
That, for me, was probably one of the most amazing experiences of my life. Because I come from a very Italian Catholic background. And when someone in our family were to pass, it's a very structured, very ritualistic experience. You know, you go to the church and you view, and then you have this service. And your family just kind of threw caution to the wind and said, we're going to do this Nana's way, on her terms, in her space. And there was no formality, there was no right, wrong, or indifferent. It was just everybody celebrating the life that was and the spirit that lives on, and it was just amazing.
There was that time where it was just, she was there but not fully there, and we were getting to spend that time together. I mean, I know from my standpoint, you know, Michael, we haven't spent a huge amount of time together over my life. Right. And those 3 weeks were really incredibly special for me,
to
develop that relationship as well.
Yeah. That was, and it, like we said, that's what Mom wanted. And she was able to have that. And it was, in some ways, a slow death, but that gave us all time to absorb it. It wasn't any kind of shock when she finally went.
It all seems so natural and normal. You know, I guess in a similar way that if a birth occurs at home, where it's not like a medical issue, it's just a life issue. And it felt very non-medicalized. Maybe that's part of what made it, you know, so beautiful, too. It wasn't, you know, beeping machines and tubes. Just Mom ending her life and, you know, taking her last breaths in a very natural way.
When I was talking with Tomas, he said that my Nana's process of dying was a gift for us, and that's really stuck with me. She died in just the way she wanted, and her resolve to die on her own terms did become a gift for us. Those 3 weeks allowed my family the space and time to be together, process, and celebrate her life with us. And even though now she's gone, I will continue to cherish those memories and moments. That was 3 weeks, a documentary about the last 3 weeks of life of Claire Woodward, my Nana, and the impact her final days had on my family. Thanks to Nikki Haskin and Tomas Bayou from Suncrest Hospice, and huge thanks to my mom, Annie, and Uncle Michael. This story is in honor of my Nana. In Boulder, Colorado, I'm Julia Caulfield.